Session number 10133, Mr. Cyril Webley, part 5.
Can you tell me how you came to go to Palestine in 1945?
Yes, once the war was finished and we were all back home, and SOE had dispersed as an active organisation, we were at Milton Hall in Peterborough waiting RDMOB from SOE. Some of the boys, civilians of course, went into Civvy Street, but regular soldiers such as myself went back to a holding unit, and being as I was a regular and a parachutist, I was transferred to my parent regiment, which was the Royal Corps of Signals and 6th Airborne Division. The only airborne division that was left, number one of course, was broken up and faded away after the war, and there was only 6th Airborne left. Many of the regulars from the 1st Airborne Division upon disbandment found themselves in 6th Airborne, so that I suppose 60%, 50-60% were regular soldiers, and this increased over a period of time as the wartime soldier left. And the replacements were either National Service or regular. I went out to the Airborne Division in Palestine. It was out there a few months before I got there. And we went to, we went to join them at Teletwinski.
Where?
Teletwinski.
How do you spell that?
Teletwinski, I suppose, Teletwinski, something like that. Shortly after I arrived, we moved to Sarafan. And from Sarafan, we went down to Kostina. And Kostina with a Q. That's Kastina, and that was where we were for 18 months or so. When all the big drives were done against the population to rout out the terrorists, the Jürgens Vilumi and the Stern Gang, we were actually based at Sarafan when we had the 5-day closure of Tel Aviv. We sealed off Tel Aviv. We moved to Kostina, and I was staff sergeant, and I had our troop. Then I came in and took over the heavy wireless troop by virtue of my trade. This meant looking after the operators that were running the shifts, from division to all brigades, from division to army, and as such I had to visit all the brigades and units that we were working to. I rotated and for a short time was Hugh Stockwell's operator. Saw one or two nasty things that I actually had been doing, and not realising how nasty they were. When the boot's on the other foot, it doesn't seem so nice. But you try telling some of your friends, that you'd be doing the self-same thing. It doesn't appease them in any way when they see their friend has been shot in the back, or has booby-trapped and hung from trees, or in the case of Staff Sergeant Lemon of the PT Corps, he was our PTI, and used to spend all his time teaching the local kids how to swim. Knocked off his motorcycle with a piano wire, and there's his body on one side and his head on the other.
What was his name?
Lemon. PTI Lemon.
L-E-M-O-N. Mm. Where was that?
That was outside Akia. RAF Akia. That was our local parachute school when we were at Kostina.
Who was responsible for it, do you know?
Either the Stern Gang or the IZL. I shouldn't be surprised if it was the former. They were operating in our area, quite a lot of Stern Gang. They were the ones who tried to take the armory at Sarafan. All came in British uniforms. The only reason that they didn't get away with it was a very, very alert corporal in charge of the armory saw that they were all wearing tin hats. And they don't wear tin hats on camp, there's no need to. And he wouldn't open the door, and they tried to blow it off, and he held them at bay, and he got a decoration for it. That's where I bumped into a fellow I had met before, Ray Farron.
Roy Farron.
He had a nasty do, because...
Could I interrupt you there, before we go on to Farron, because... could I ask you if you were at Sarafand when that raid on the armory took place?
No, I was at Christina. Robbie Lang, a friend of mine, had taken over our troop when he was there, and he was one of those that was called out. They rallied very, very quickly, but they had killed a few British boys. There were some nasty dudes. I mean, the time when they hit the railway line and the lads that were invalided home or were going home on Leap, that's leave in anticipation of Python. It was a leave they brought in that you didn't have to wait your full 4 years. If you could be allowed after three, you could go home and leave, you know, and then come back. They blew it up and 50-odd lads were killed, and they had the mass funeral at Sarafand. Yeah.
What was Python?
Python was the name that was given to those that were allowed on leave before actually doing the full time that they normally would have had to do. By the very nature of their job, they could be allowed to go that little bit early.
So Leap...
It was a code name for it. Leap was leave in anticipation of Python. Normally, you would have L-I-A-P. L-I-A-P. Python was the length of, that you did overseas before being allowed on leave. But there were those few that could be allowed earlier, so it was leave in anticipation of life. Leap, as they called it.
And the Zionist gangs blew up a group going off on leave?
They blew up the train, yeah. Very successfully.
Where was that?
That was just outside Petit Tikva, I think.
How do you spell that?
P-I-T-A or P-E-T-A. Petit. Tikva was T-I-Q-V-A. Petit Tikva.
But you weren't there when it happened?
No, we got rushed over there soon afterwards. Whenever the troops turned out, I had the big gin palaces with the radios on board, you see, which I had to keep going all the time. And my lads operating them. Some to brigade, some here, some there.
What did you find when you got there?
A bloody awful mess. The civilians and the police and everyone else were... I mean, I didn't get right up to where the wreck was. I mean, TAC headquarters would probably be half a mile away. But tactical headquarters, and it was nasty. But they carried out one or two things that were rather nasty. And it was the same thing I'd been doing only a year previous kind of thing. Well,
with SOA.
With SOA. Mm. When you're on the receiving end, you can understand... The German mentality to a certain extent. Their training, I suppose, was slightly different to ours, in as much as irrespective of the order and the horrific consequences that they would automatically carry out, our lads may not. You could understand the German soldier being incensed when a train is blown up with all his mates on board, the same as a British soldier is incensed when the terrorist is the same to us. But as has been pointed out, when you're actively fighting each other in a war, it's slightly different from an unknown civilian terrorist creeping up and doing the same thing.
How did you come to meet Major Roy Farron?
Farron, I had met when I first went up to Geneva, the SAS camp. I went over there with a couple of suitcase sets in 42. I met several officers. I didn't know who they were, and introduced. He was up at Derna and Gambut when they were dispatching fellows out from the plains into the Balkans. And then he was with the Airborne Division in Palestine. And then he had his own special security branch, intelligence branch, that was infiltrating... the Jewish gangs, and then there was the trouble with what was his name? They took this one Jewish fellow, and he was subsequently tortured for information, and Roy Farron was virtually cashiered.
Did you know anything about that incident?
Not really, no. Only hearsay.
What did you have any contact with the policy of the Zionist gangs of flogging British soldiers in retaliation for the floggings that occurred of their prisoners?
Well, the law as it was in those days, you could be hung for murder, you could be hung for this, that, and the other. You could be flogged for this, that, and the other, and they kept that going and implemented it against the Jewish fellows themselves. And they thought that this wasn't right. They saw themselves as soldiers fighting a cause. So they let it be known. They broadcast it on their radios. They published it on papers stuck on walls and telegraph poles that it would be reciprocal. If one of their lads was shot, one of ours would be executed. If any of their people would be flogged, our people would be in exactly the same manner. And this is what happened to Paddy Brett, the brigade major.
The brigade major of what?
He was, I think it was 5 Brigade, I think it was, up at Camp 21, Nathania. I was in the camp that evening, and Paddy Brett had taken a female companion down to the restaurant in Nathania for a meal, and he came walking, staggering back into camp, and he was in a mess. And it transpired, apparently, that he was having a meal, and some armed people broke into the restaurant, picked him up, either arm, took him outside and took him down onto the beach, and they spread-eagled and tied him onto a bench on the foreshore, and they just belted into him and gave him a good flogging and made a mess of his back, and then cut him loose and let him go. And when he came back, the lads went wild, because the camp, virtually in its entirety, just turned out and marched down the road. It was only a mile from the camp, down the road from the camp, straight across the main highway, down into Nathania, and they turned that town upside down. I don't condone the action, because I myself went down there and kicked him a couple of windows, and probably, as I say, the owners of those shops knew nothing about it, but frustration and pent-up fury, if you like, at what they'd done to a very, very respected and well-liked major, it just boiled over, and the lads decided that they would get their own back. And when you get a gang, it's easily done. It starts off with good intent, go down there, try and find somebody, and the next thing you know, it gets out of hand. And Nathania suffered. Same as when the lads were hung. The lads.
Before we go on to that, could I ask you what damage was done in Nathania?
Oh, there were various houses that were ransacked, and I think every shop window was kicked in and broken, and cars overturned, and it was just a nasty hour or so. The military police were rushed down there. Did a pretty good job, even the airborne military police. They herded us all back into camp, but you can't sentence an entire camp of over 1,000 men.
Was it just Jewish property that was picked out, or did Arabs suffer as well?
Basically, no. I shouldn't think there was an Arab down there. It was the Jewish diamond town, and I never heard of any looting as such. It was just the fact that they went down there and they created a lot of damage.
Were individuals attacked?
Not to my knowledge. I didn't see any, and certainly I didn't partake of it. It was just the fact that property was destroyed just to give way to their land.
So when the military police came into Nathania, did the British troops obey them, or was there any violence offered to the military police?
Oh, no, no violence to the police at all. And as a matter of fact, there were some rather shamefaced people wandering around, especially those with rank sergeants and staff sergeants and things. And the lads did fall in, and they went back in quite a military manner. It was just the fact that enough was enough, and they just went on the warpath for a couple of hours. And afterwards, after it was all over, they went back there, cool as you like, and just returned to camp. And there were no individual acts where people could be charged, and I think there were eight or nine court-martials, people held behind when they should have gone home. But for what happened during those hours, I mean, the brigade got off very, very lightly.
Was there any organiser of this retaliation, or was it entirely spontaneous?
It was spontaneous. I mean, obviously someone said, let's go down and teach the masters a lesson, but the lads just went down there. And they didn't march down there as they marched back. They just went down there in gaggles and groups, you know, spread out over a few hundred yards. But when it was all over, they came back in a compact military group.
Do you remember the notorious case of the killing of the two British Army sergeants?
I remember the case, yes, and I remember the horrible incident of the booby-trap bodies. And once again, the lads blew up and went off the deep end, but I don't recall any. Oh, the watchman. I don't recall anything about damage to property or anything like that. I do know that one or two Jews that were taken into custody for minor things afterwards all suffered a good beating up because of it.
I think you were telling me about another incident where one of your comrades was going off at the end of his period of service.
Oh, Joe Rich, yes.
Can you tell me that again, please?
Well, Joe Rich was one of our lads, and he was deferred operationally vital. His group, instead of being out on a certain date, he was declared operationally vital and was therefore DR'd, as they termed it, and was retained for an additional 3, 4, 5, 6 months, depending on the circumstances. And in Joe's case, he was there for 3 or 4 months. And then came the day he was due to go home, and the boat turned up, and it was out in the harbour in the evening, and we went out, took him out, and gave him a couple of farewell drinks, and at the end of the evening, he was first out the door, and he got shot and killed.
Was there any retaliation over that?
No, because when someone riddles a doorway, you immediately get back in and take cover. And by the time we got out, they'd gone. The streets were clear and there's nothing we could do. There was no one around. Reported to the police, reported to the authorities, and Joe was taken away.
Whilst you were in Palestine, were all the attacks on the British troops that you knew of personally from the Jews, or were there any from the Arabs?
Of all the time I was there, I didn't recall one from the Arabs, which didn't mean that I respected them in any way. I liked them. Mind you, of all the British Army desertions, I should say that 9 out of 10 went to assist the Arab, as opposed to the odd ones that went to the Jews. But there again, after it was all over, the Jews offered those that had deserted to help them, offered them residence in Israel if they wanted to stay, Israel nationality, passports back to Britain or to wherever else they wanted to go, and thank you very much. The Arabs just turned our lads over to the military.
Did you know of any specific cases?
Once again, no specific case, but being a regular soldier that had been serving out there, the story circulated in the army very, very quickly. Yes, I do know of people that deserted because two of our own lads deserted, and funnily enough, deserted to the Jews. And a couple of days later went down to the car park in Haifa in airborne signals uniforms and lifted two jeeps.
How did you and your comrades feel when the British mandate came to an end?
Well, in actual fact, I left before the mandate ended because I took the advance party of the newly formed Parallel Brigade to Germany, and then went back to Palestine and came out on the rear party. So I saw the main party leave, and funnily enough, during that period, the interview between the main party leaving and then our leaving, and we, the mandate finished on the 8th of May, I believe it was, and we left on the 23rd of June, it was different again. We were going around the various local kibbutzim, and they were making us happy, and the troubles were local and sparse, but we were tolerated far better than we had been, and I won't say that we were reluctant to leave, but wasn't with a sense of relief that we left. We left, but it was on a more friendly basis than it had been all the time that the troubles were on.